Hello, and welcome to episode number 98 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Those familiar with ufological lore, and especially how it ties into our deep religious history, will tell you that UFOs have been around for as long as we have, and perhaps even longer. Indeed, it has long been acknowledged that the assumed non-human intelligences behind these manifestations may be responsible not only for the inspiration and direction of our most foundational meaning-making models, that is to say, our religious traditions, but also for our very origin as a species. That being the case, some might find it a stretch to believe that the times we find ourselves in now are somehow unique when it comes to this enigmatic topic. Yes, they're here, but they always have been, directing affairs mostly in shadow, a la something like Jacques Vallée's control system hypothesis, so what would be different about now? Or so the thinking goes. While that's an understandable perspective to have, and while we should always be on the lookout for bias in our contemporary reading of history, there is indeed compelling evidence to suggest that what we're seeing with this phenomenon since the turn of the millennium, and especially over the last few years or so, is indeed worthy of note, suggesting that we may very well be heading towards some crescendo point where our very relationship to this phenomenon, and for that matter, to reality itself, fundamentally changes. The evidence for this notion arises not just in the increased activity of alien intelligences in our midst, though we have indeed seen a rise in reported accounts of sightings and engagements with the craft apparently piloted by the so-called NHI of late, but also via reports from experiencers, those uniquely tuned into these various alien groups who have seen visions of imminent changes that speak to the coming of a foundationally different world. While even these two data points, the increased sightings and interactions and sense from experiencers that something is coming, might not be enough to convince many, these are not the only elements we need to reckon with here. Just as important in this equation is the rising tide of challenges our civilization is presently facing, challenges so daunting that they threaten our very existence. These matters include climate change, geopolitical conflict rife with ever more catastrophic weapons of mass destruction, and the sudden rise of artificial intelligence. All three of these are particularly troublesome because they are being met by a center of gravity of consciousness still driven by fear, scarcity, and what our most ancient and enduring spiritual traditions, not to mention many of these others, call the illusion of separation. Those familiar with ufological lore will also know that the trajectory we're presently on as a human Earth-based civilization is precisely the one that these various non-human and non-conventionally human intelligences have long warned us about. Their historic concern about our ever more technological focus, unmoored from an accompanying increase in our level of consciousness, is central to the messages delivered to humankind via the experiencers we've already discussed. Suddenly, those warnings and prognostications going back decades seem strikingly prescient. That said, we know that timing is particularly challenging to predict and parse out when it comes to these otherworldly admonitions. And thus, the question still remains, just how pressing are these issues, and just how close are we to some fundamental transformation of life as we have thus far known it? Furthermore, how might the very real march towards official disclosure we've seen of late be informed by all of this? These are the very thorny, yet crucial matters we'll seek to gain clarity around in this, the 98th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's episode, I would just like to remind everyone that if you'd like to support this podcast and the work that I do, and in so doing gain access to all of my content, which includes not just Point of Convergence and Liminal Frames, but also the various feature series I create, and OTC Squared, as well as live question and answer sessions with me, as well as early access to and discounts on online courses and in-person retreats, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. All right, now let's get into today's topic. We're going to be talking about the nexus of forces arising in our time. As I said in the introduction there, what's amazing about this time, remarkable and so compelling in terms of the significance of this time, is how there are these many forces arising at the very same time, simultaneously, that each portend a massive change in our civilization. And as I mentioned in the introduction, some of these are civilization challenging and some are civilization collapsing. On the other hand, when you have a pressure cooker like this, like when you create a diamond, you also have the potential right now for something transformational, where our civilization could rise to the challenge after seeing these many dynamics arising in our midst with that much more profound and far-reaching insight, fundamentally transform our relationship with ourselves, with the planet, and with this larger cosmic community. But regardless of how we choose to respond to these simultaneously arising challenges and revelations, the world will very likely be a very different place within about a decade or so from what it is now. That's what this confluence of forces arising right now suggests. In order to fully grok the significance of this particular moment in our history, I would like to go through each of these elements that are simultaneously arising that, again, portend major challenges, but also opportunities for our civilization. The first one I'd like to discuss is the fact that we are in the midst of a scientific revolution. When I interviewed Bernardo Castro, we talked about this, and he mentioned that we are in a very different place than we were even 20 or 30 years ago. And here I speak of the shift from something like physicalism, the notion that stuff is ultimately all that is ultimately real, to something like idealism, that posits that mind or consciousness is primary, and from that we have things like matter that arise, energy that arise. But again, fundamentally, consciousness, mentation processes are foundational. Said differently, that means that all of the things we see around us, ourselves, the objects, etc., are all basically elements of a dreamscape found in what Bernardo calls mind at large, or what some might call the mind of God or original mind, ultimate mind. Now here we have kind of a combination of the best of Western religious traditions and Eastern cosmologies as well, because on the one hand, we do posit something like an ultimate God, but we also recognize, again, in light of Eastern traditions, that we too are facets of that original mind. In other words, on the one hand, you can talk about us as being independent of this mind of God or of God itself. But again, really that's a perspective, a relative perspective. In the absolute sense, we are source itself exploring all the permutations of existence, of manifestation. Now, what evidence seems to suggest from quantum mechanics and many other co-arising fields, including psychology, neurology, etc., we are seeing these converging yet independent fields all pointing in the same direction. And again, as Bernardo pointed out, he's noticing a shift in academia where the strength of the evidence alone is making something like idealism much more paramount than it used to be, even a couple of decades ago. That said, we know that science is conservative. It moves slowly. And we know that scientists are just as resistant to change as is the general population, even when the evidence is pointing squarely in a new direction. And this speaks to a notion that Thomas Kuhn put forward regarding the nature and structure of scientific revolutions. In his groundbreaking book published in 1962, Kuhn, an American philosopher of science, noted the following elements of scientific revolutions. Number one, they involve paradigm shifts. Kuhn argued that scientific progress occurs through a series of shifts in scientific paradigms. A paradigm is a set of shared beliefs, theories, methods, and standards that guide scientific research within a particular discipline. A scientific revolution involves a paradigm shift where an old paradigm is replaced by a new and incompatible one. Number two, normal science versus revolutionary science. Kuhn distinguished between periods of quote-unquote normal science and quote-unquote revolutionary science. During normal science, scientists work within the established paradigm, solving puzzles and refining existing theories. However, when anomalies and problems accumulate, normal science can enter a crisis phase. This crisis may lead to a scientific revolution, marked by the adoption of a new paradigm. Number three, incommensurability. Kuhn argued that paradigms are often incommensurable, meaning that they are so different that they cannot be directly compared or measured against each other. This poses challenges in communication between scientists working under different paradigms and can contribute to resistance during scientific revolutions. Next, role of anomalies. Anomalies, or problems that cannot be easily explained within the existing paradigm, play a crucial role in triggering a scientific revolution. These anomalies accumulate over time, leading to a crisis that prompts scientists to consider alternative theories. Finally, social and psychological aspects. Kuhn emphasized the role of social and psychological factors in scientific revolutions. The scientific community plays a key role in accepting or rejecting new paradigms, and the transition from one paradigm to another is not just a rational process, but involves shifts in collective beliefs, values, and scientific commitments. Overall, Kuhn's work has had a significant impact on the philosophy of science, challenging the notion of science as a purely objective and cumulative enterprise. Instead, he highlighted the complex and sociological aspects of scientific development, with revolutions playing a central role in reshaping the understanding of the natural world. In other words, things do not just move incrementally in a smooth, linear way. Rather, we see these moments of crisis that then turn into a revolution, a completely new paradigm that really is not commensurable with the previous one. That's what we're going through now. And of course, Point of Convergence, the name of this very podcast, speaks to this, how psi phenomena, near-death experience, out-of-body experience, interactions with apparitions and assumed dead loved ones, etc., all point in this direction. And of course, interactions with these various beings, some that seem physical, some that seem non-physical, some that seem something in between, quasi-physical, this also plays into this, this convergence of data that is taking us in a new direction that I would argue is not only justified by the data already at hand, but in fact necessary if we are to, again, change the way we see ourselves, our relationships with each other, with the planet, and with the surrounding cosmic community. Only a scientific revolution is really going to put us in a place where we can see things as they really are. We need more than the scientific revolution, but we certainly need that. The good news is we are in the midst of it. But again, the challenge is science moves very slowly, and because bias exists within science as it is practiced, which Kuhn was so good about demonstrating, the question is, will this happen fast enough for us to meet the moment and the challenges we currently face? Now, speaking of scientific progress that arises because of anomalies, I think here of the recent Seoul Symposium, where various academics presented information suggesting that we should really grapple with the UFO phenomenon, that the data is compelling, that this is real and has been real for a very long time. Now, what's interesting about the Seoul Symposium is that even for the people in the audience, many of them, of course, were from ufology and are familiar with this data, but there were others who were invited who were newer to this. And the sense was there was shock in the room among some of these people because they recognized that these credible scholars were speaking about this phenomenon as if it were real, not as if it were speculative. And of course, those of you familiar with this podcast and my work and ufology in general, well, no, that's a no-brainer. Of course, the evidence is pointing in this direction, and it's the bias we just spoke about within science as it is practiced and within the mainstream, for that matter, that has prevented this from being grappled with up until now. But the surprise and perhaps even shock among some in the audience, including, of course, the many scientists that are now watching the videos from the Seoul Symposium, point to the fact that this really is groundbreaking material that is forcing people, including people in positions of power, both in academia and in politics, etc., to really reconsider our place in the cosmos and even reconsider what is reality, again, as we've been saying on this podcast recently. Now, that said, while the Seoul Symposium was really key in terms of academia's engagement with this phenomenon and positing different hypotheses by which to perhaps explain it and understand it, we should remember that one thing that is still missing is experiencer testimony. We've been talking about experiencers over the last several podcasts and have on many occasions on this podcast over the several years that I've been broadcasting. And this lack of experiencer testimony, this lack of reckoning with what experiencers have been told and experienced, was reflected in a social media post I made recently, where I said, quote, "Just a reminder that what is still almost completely missing from the societal conversation around UFOs slash UAP slash aliens is experiencer testimony. Key here is not just accounts of the beings and their technology, but also their pressing messages for humanity," unquote. Now, in just a moment, we'll get to those pressing messages and how they may have been, again, prescient, and how they are more relevant today than ever. Shockingly so, many would argue. But again, at this point, when you think about the fact that the mainstream is so cautious in discussing this phenomenon, even though we've had testimony before Congress about it, testifying to not only the recovery of craft, but also of bodies, so-called biologics. And yet the mainstream is very hesitant about discussing this, even when there is growing scientific evidence, growing consensus amongst the political set that this is real. And even beyond that, once they do recognize that and begin to report on it, we're still a long way from seeing experiencer testimony brought into the conversation. Again, as amazing and groundbreaking and helpful as the Seoul Symposium was, and other academic movements that are springing up around the world, we still did not hear much about experiencers at all. We did not hear about the abduction phenomenon, even though I would argue, and as I have been arguing recently, both in interviews and on podcasts, the evidence for the historicity of this campaign, this abduction and hybridization campaign, is quite compelling. While some academics, especially in the social sciences and the humanities, would like to think about a kind of third realm or an alternate state of consciousness that has existed for humankind across our entire history, within this overarching metaframe of the UFO phenomenon, we have individual patterns speaking to the historicity of specific movements involving specific beings interacting with human beings in very physical ways. And of course, John Mack's work speaks to that. And just as a quick aside here, John Mack actually sought out Thomas Kuhn and his understanding about scientific revolutions as John sought to grapple with and communicate about this phenomenon, and specifically the individuals that he was dealing with in his clinical work. And of course, many of these are the abductees that I've spoken about. Interestingly, in terms of synchronicity, Thomas Kuhn and John Mack actually grew up together. Their families knew each other, sometimes spent family holidays together. And so this was very helpful for John as he really wrestled with how to communicate this, especially after his first book, Abduction, before he then penned his second book, Passport to the Cosmos, which we spoke about last time. He really had a time of soul searching in between, trying to, on the one hand, gain traction in the mainstream by talking about this phenomenon, but doing so in a way that it could actually be communicated to a physicalist culture, to a mainstream Western culture that was so opposed to these notions. Again, even though there was quite a bit of evidence supporting them, especially circumstantial evidence. And then opening up of the aperture around how we can even gather evidence, how we can know things to begin with. Again, this is part of what's in play here with this overarching frame of the UFO phenomenon and general paranormality. But again, what's interesting is even within this overarching frame, we have specific historical enterprises like the abduction and hybridization campaign of the late 20th century. But again, because this is all rejected in the mainstream and considered with scoff and ridicule still much of the time, we don't even take the time to look closely and find these individual patterns within the overarching pattern. But to greet some of the challenges we are facing and to engage with some of the opportunities coming our way, we must begin to move in those directions. Now, a moment ago, I spoke about experiencers and how their testimony is key here, not just because they can describe the beings and describe the technology they encountered, but also because this is our one way of actually engaging with the messages, the communication that came from these beings, again, much of the time telepathically. And the beings were not shy about sharing a message. In fact, there's remarkable consistency over time around the nature of the messages. They fundamentally had to do with, as I've spoken about here, and this is something that inspired Essence of Being, the creation of that initiative, is a sense that we are misunderstanding who we are at a fundamental level. Again, as I mentioned in the introduction, that speaks to the illusion of the separate self, but also the way that we have turned the physical world into a commodity. We think of physical reality as this inert mass that we can use to our benefit without understanding the fundamental interconnectivity of consciousness that is everywhere. So what was key about these messages was not just about our relationship to these beings, to the planet, to the larger cosmic community, but also that our focus on this inert understanding of physical reality, where we just take, manipulate, as if it's this commodity and not a being, not a presence. Again, here, the notion is that the planet itself has consciousness. But because we have failed to see that, and because our own consciousness is wrapped up in this unending, singular-minded focus on technological progress, we have misapprehended what it's all about, the entire purpose of the entire enterprise. And because of that misapprehension, we are really out of alignment with reality. And as reality tends to teach us, when you live a long time out of alignment with it, you get a wake-up call, because reality is what it is, regardless of how we feel about it. So the challenges we are facing, the many challenges we are facing, have to do fundamentally with this misunderstanding of who we are and what everything else is, what this is, quote unquote, as many spiritual teachers have suggested. As I mentioned on recent podcast episodes, the kids in Zimbabwe were communicated this, that our single-minded focus on technological progress as an end in itself and unmoored from an understanding that we are consciousness, we are source consciousness exploring itself. Because of that, we are facing massive challenges, even extinction-level events. This was communicated to experiencers over the last several decades of the 20th century. And what you find when you speak to these people, and I've spoken to multiple ones of them because of my work with the John Mack Institute, you find that, sure enough, the prognostications made about our future and concerns about our future have indeed come true. That these beings, again, that seem to be able to manipulate space-time, perhaps knew what was coming. It certainly seems that way. Again, part of the message here is that they may be from our relative future. Again, though, how we understand time is challenged altogether. But from a relative point of view, think about them being from our future, at least seeing our future. They see a larger horizon than we do. And because of that, they warned us about the track we were on. And sure enough, this should speak to the credibility of these beings, I would argue, because sure enough, we are facing crises now because we did not steer away from the course we were on in the 80s and 90s. And while there is perhaps still time, even now, if we don't make this shift in perspective that then produces a different course for our civilization, it will not end well for us. This was the warning back then, and again, all of the evidence around us seems to be supporting that. Now, I titled this episode, Nearing the Event Horizon, and that came to mind because what I sense here is that even if it's not one particular thing that we know will be the seeds of our demise, there are numerous crises that are rising at the same time, simultaneously, that all threaten our future. And this leads to this notion of a meta-crisis, which I will describe in a moment. But the point here is that we might not know what specific event is going to sow the seeds of our demise. It might be one of a number of things. And these things, of course, are interacting and interrelating. And it is like approaching an event horizon where the closer you get, the less likely it is that you'll be able to pull out of the gravitational pull of that event horizon. That's what I would suggest as an analogy to what we are facing right now. And as the days, weeks, months, and years go on, it becomes increasingly less likely that we will avoid that. Because, of course, where do you end up? Nowhere other than where you are presently headed, unless you change course. And as of now, we really have not. Not since the 80s and 90s when these messages were originally delivered. As a quick aside here, before I jump into the meaning of metacrisis, I just wanted to say again that I think we should not respond here with fear, with trepidation. That's not what my hope is here in delivering this information. This can also be an opportunity. At any moment, we can wake up. And again, experiencers across time have had this message. Humanity needs to wake up. That a leveling up of our consciousness perspective is what is required to meet these challenges. So in that sense, it's as much an opportunity as it is a challenge. And sometimes it's the pressure, again, as I said earlier, of these co-arising forces that is ultimately responsible for a massive fundamental change in perspective and a realigning of course. That may happen here. I hope it does. It certainly presents the possibility of that outcome. All right, so let's discuss metacrisis. The term metacrisis is used to describe the many global crises that are interconnected. These crises include environmental, social, political, cultural, economic, and psychological crises. The metacrisis can be understood as a transitional period from the global civilization of current times to something new and uncertain. It can also be defined as a generalized educational crisis that involves a set of related psychological dynamics. The metacrisis has to do with how humans understand themselves and the world. Again, the message of essence of being there. It can also refer to our inability to see how we see, our apparent lack of interest in understanding how we understand, and our failure to perceive how we perceive or to know how we know. Technology is compounding the metacrisis, technology that makes us more distracted, divided, and confused, reduces our ability to react wisely. Now, that was partly written up by an AI prompt I put forward. I would just like to say here, as I said to the Expanding Awareness course class, I would suggest we use the word respond rather than react. It's our response ability that is key here. When we are lost in reaction, we actually go offline. We don't have the capacity to respond to the moment because it feels so overwhelming. But again, that definition of metacrisis there helps us understand the moment we are in. And again, it fits perfectly with the prognostications, the predictions, the warnings, the admonitions given by these beings in the latter part of the 20th century. Now, speaking of the sense of many things could come that could fundamentally change our civilization, perhaps even end or transform our civilization, let's discuss some of these. First, we have the challenges to climate change. And here we think of recent information that's come out about the North Atlantic Current. There's a sense that because the ocean temperatures have been so unusually warm over the last year or so, going back several years, of course, but this last summer was particularly startling to climate scientists, the concern is that this current will collapse at some point. It will just stop moving energy as it has done for decades, for centuries. And of course, that means that Europe becomes much colder than it presently is, and South America becomes much hotter than it presently is. Now, I understand some of you will be suspicious of this climate change kind of information. I understand it is complex, and we certainly do not understand all of it. But again, up until now, all of the models have been eclipsed by how quickly these things happen. When a model has said this might happen in 30 or 50 years, it's happened in 10 or 20. So we are much further along in this pattern than we expected to be, according to the climate change models. More importantly, again, these beings suggested this was going to be the case, that this was the trajectory we were on. I think here of the work of Dolores Cannon. She spoke about in the early 2000s that we are much further along in this climate change campaign than we realize. And because of that, we're going to have a rude awakening. And sure enough, that's exactly what's happened over the last few years. So that's the first thing that could really significantly change our civilization. We're talking about 30-degree shifts in climate patterns within a few decades, potentially. Again, I don't mean to be alarmist, but so far, all of the evidence seems to be moving up the timeline of this, and again, fits with the messages and the warnings. We also have information around solar flares that's interesting, not just because science understands that a massive solar flare could greatly impact the Earth, especially when we have such a large digital imprint and our grid relies so much on electricity, and a large solar flare could knock that out. So on the one hand, we understand that something can happen and does happen with the sun, and a major solar flare could have a major impact on our civilization. But also there's this sense that experiencers think that somehow the sun may be involved. I want to make it clear here, there's not complete consensus among all experiencers regarding what is going to be the catalyst for what really changes our civilization. But several ones come up time and time again. Solar flares is one. Another one is a magnetic pole shift. Again, historically, from geological research, we understand this has happened in the past with the Earth. it will happen again. There's even some evidence suggesting that we're overdue for this shift, and that can cause massive disruption as well. And even though in a relatively short period of time in terms of Earth history, the Earth settles down again after this pole shift, for a civilization living upon the Earth, it can be quite catastrophic. That could also happen. The last thing I want to say here is that we shouldn't just think about these natural occurrences as just natural in terms of them just being this working of mindless, thoughtless, energetic dynamics amongst the planet and the solar system and the cosmos. Again, the point here is that consciousness is primary, that there are these higher intelligences that are orchestrating all of these events. So in that sense, we shouldn't just feel like victims to these mindless, natural, quote-unquote, processes. We should remember that there are overarching elements in play here, intelligent elements that are orchestrating these events ultimately for the greatest good. But again, a key here is that sometimes what we think of as the greatest good from our relative limited perspective is not in line with the way it looks from a more overarching perspective. We should keep that in mind too, but we should also not feel like we're victims to this natural, quote-unquote, again, mindless process. So that speaks to some of the occurrences happening in nature around the planet right now that are challenging and could play major roles in disrupting our civilization. Of course, we cannot look past our civilization itself, the way we interrelate with each other, the very primitive way we interrelate with each other. I just want to begin by highlighting this. We have a small sample size here. We're only aware of our own civilization, unless you're an experiencer who's been exposed to the notion of other civilizations. But again, for those of us only familiar with our own civilization and how modern times seem so much more advanced than previous times, we lose sight of just how primitive we are. Again, here we have a situation where the major powers of the world, that are still driven by power plays, by the way, to begin with, have massive numbers of nuclear weapons pointed at each other that, if launched, could wipe out human civilization and the biosphere in the matter of hours. And we do this even as we talk about being a sophisticated, advanced civilization. It's pretty remarkable that we don't realize just how primitive we are. And again, on top of that, we have people at the lowest rungs of consciousness levels who tend to be the ones that ascend to political power in our world. Now, that's partly a problem that's born out of the elite that control things. But we as the populace also could change that if we could unite and rise to the moment. Again, if we demanded change, if we embodied that change, we were the example that we seek, then things would change. So it's not just about blaming this small elite. That's part of it, indeed. But we as a populace need to wake up. Again, that's key to the messages from these other beings. But let's discuss a few of the challenges we are facing sociologically, geopolitically, etc. Of course, we have the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which is most dangerous because it threatens the possibility of expanding to a much larger conflict involving the West and Russia and Vladimir Putin's notion of the Soviet Union as it still exists in his mind. Then we've got an equally challenging situation in China. China, of course, has ascended as a major world power, and they have this ongoing conflict with Taiwan, and we have made guarantees as Western countries to protect Taiwan, especially the United States. Now, China is watching as the United States gets overextended in the world. And some of these countries that we see as adversaries, countries like China and Russia, including various Islamic countries in the Middle East, might very well collude to challenge the responsiveness of the United States. And of course, then you have something more like a three-body problem. In other words, during the Cold War, there was a certain equilibrium that arose because of this notion of mutually assured destruction amongst these two fairly modern nations. But when you have multiple agents, multiple different states, including rogue agents who have nuclear weapons, this becomes much more complex, much less likely to be predictable, controllable. And as I pointed out on this podcast before, the challenge with nuclear weapons is not just whether or not you can get out of some major conflict like World War II by introducing atomic weapons, but then you have the challenge that for the rest of human history, these types of weapons exist, these weapons of mass destruction, and more nation states, as well as rogue non-nation states, will gain access to these weapons. So in other words, the chances over time that you avoid some sort of massive nuclear exchange go down. That's the challenge. And last but not least, in terms of geopolitical conflict, we have the situation in the Middle East, which is not cooling down at all. It seems to be exacerbating in terms of its tension. And underlyingly, because of the dynamics that are fueling that conflict in the Middle East between Israel and the surrounding Islamic countries, because the fundamental issues are not addressed, and again, this really ultimately comes down to a misapprehension of consciousness to the interconnectivity of those countries and all countries in the world, and indeed all human beings and all sentient life throughout the cosmos, because that is not addressed at that level, it just flares up over and over again, like a virus that flares up in a body. And eventually it will not end well. Even if we are able to cool tensions periodically, eventually this suggests that something massive will happen. And again, that these other countries might get drawn in. And when countries like China and Russia see it as perhaps in their benefit to make alignments with some of these countries in the Middle East, it increases the chance of something like World War III. And of course, the challenge is because our consciousness has not really grown much over the last several decades, while our technological capacity to destroy ourselves and the biosphere has, this creates real challenges in terms of what the future will look like. Again, also possibilities, opportunities, if we will take these signs as a wake-up call. But if we do not, it does not look good for us in terms of the future, which again might speak to why these beings, these different non-human and non-conventionally human intelligences, are increasing their interaction with us. It's because we are reaching this inflection point, this crescendo point, if you will, of which there is no return in terms of returning to the kind of civilization we have been up until now. This might be why they are here. Again, while there may be this sense of a prime directive that generally they are hands off in terms of interaction, at least the more ascendant ones are, as I've been saying for a long time now, there comes time where a greater interaction is justified, even in the minds of these higher intelligences, because we are such a precipice of potential self-destruction. Now, I already mentioned the possibility of these other nation states colluding to weaken and challenge the dominance of the United States. And of course, on top of that, we are a divided country ourselves. I'm speaking here of Americans. Apologies to those of you around the world, but we Americans understand and we are focused on how much we are a divided society right now. And of course, that is being exacerbated by foreign agents and foreign AI that would like to drive up those tensions. And because many Americans are focused in a narrow way on this culture war and which side they're on, they don't see the larger dynamics at play and how that can produce a much weaker country that is less able to engage with these larger geopolitical dynamics. Just then I mentioned AI, the emergence of AI, and how that's playing a role in terms of geopolitical strife and conflict and the way that war is being waged, even if it's digital war and virtual war. Well, of course, the rise of AI and the looming specter of artificial general intelligence is a major event that we are facing as well. It's remarkable how much progress there has been made with AI over the last couple of years. Just a couple of years ago, there really were very few, for instance, image generation engines, and now they are everywhere. They're prevalent across our society. And now, just recently, this past week, we saw that OpenAI introduced this new technology around creating video, realistic video, based on human language prompts. And of course, this is arising in an election year in the United States, where of course these technologies can be used to fuel discontent and fuel the cultural wars, both by people within the United States and those without who would like to weaken it. So again, this is the challenge we are facing. But as I've been saying on this episode, with each challenge, there is also an opportunity. I've been saying for a while now that AI, when greeted with the right perspective on consciousness, could be a remarkable tool, the most astounding tool in the history of our civilization, if we were united, if we really sought to program it in such a way that it would benefit the greatest good of the entire population as well as the planet, etc. In other words, if we were really acting with the right perspective on who and what we are and how we're connected, then it could be a marvelous tool that could transform a civilization and help us greet some of the challenges we face in a comprehensive way and a timely way. The challenge, of course, is that our civilization's consciousness is not at that level. And so we are still using it by this notion of being driven by scarcity and competition. And in that sense, it bodes not well for our future until we shift that consciousness perspective, that either we will use it to destroy each other, or we will make it so powerful that we lose control of it. And this again speaks of the technological singularity, which is also quickly approaching in our near future. This again was predicted decades ago by technologists and by futurists. And certainly that has happened just as expected, if not sooner than expected. And right now we have political sets around the world trying to grapple with the challenges of AI without really considering the possibilities and the opportunities. But the challenge is human beings are slow moving. Technology is not. Again, this is the challenge. If we end up giving it the reins, then we may lose control of the situation altogether. And if that happens, at the end of the day, it's not AI that is to blame. It is us. It is our consciousness. This again speaks to the moment we are in. A moment ago, I mentioned that perhaps this conundrum we face right now is what makes sense of why we are seeing an increased interaction from some of these beings. Again, I don't mean to imply that all of the beings have our best intention in mind. I think, again, we have a spectrum of consciousness. We see that within humankind. We should expect that amongst these others. And I, again, think the data does suggest that's the case, even though the most ascendant ones do control the sort of outer arm of development. And again, sometimes it's our lack of perspective that prevents us from seeing how what is ultimately happening can be in the greatest good. But in the midst of that sense of perhaps greater interaction taking place from these others, there's also the question around disclosure. Amongst the many things I've already mentioned are arising in our time, we also have this apparent march towards official disclosure. And of course, that raises the question, why? Recently, Hal Puthoff at the Soul Foundation Symposium talked about how he was actually drawn into a group around 2005 where they were tasked with deciding whether or not disclosure would be in society's best interest. And what they ultimately concluded after considering numerous elements that would change, that would simultaneously have to change with this revelation, Puthoff and his group, as well as the other groups involved, decided that they were no on this, that they actually thought that disclosure would not be in society's best interest, not at this point in our history, because too much would change too quickly. It would be too destabilizing. Again, I've spoken to this pretty prevalently on Liminal Frames and on this podcast. So that being the case, knowing that these kind of decisions have been made behind the scenes, these kind of considerations, what has changed? What changed between 2005, when Hal Puthoff was part of this group, and now, where we see this shift, especially from 2017 on, where the government seems to be acknowledging, if in fits and starts, that this phenomenon is real, that it's not just mind-altering, but it's also technological, and that they have been studying it for decades. Again, this is the implication that's pretty clear from something like the Schumer Amendment. And again, as some people have pointed out, 10 years ago, the Schumer Amendment would have been considered disclosure. It didn't quite get us here right now because we're in such a strange time in our civilization. But we certainly are nearing it, and the Schumer Amendment certainly seems like the first shoe to drop in this official disclosure process. So again, the question is, why and why now specifically? Knowing that there has been considerations before that this is too destabilizing to society. Now, John Ramirez, ex-Central Intelligence Officer, has suggested it's because U.S. intelligence is aware that something is coming. Something is going to happen, again, from the frame of 2025 to 2027, somewhere in that frame, mostly landing in 26, 27, that the sense is because something massive is going to happen. Again, not necessarily catastrophic or cataclysmic, but something that will change our understanding of reality, our relationship to it, etc. Because that is coming, there is this sense now that it would be more destabilizing to let things carry on as they are without preparing humanity for that moment. So that may be what has shifted. And again, we are seeing this evidenced in the shift in perspective and approach, evidenced beginning in 2017 and ramping up even more so in recent years, apexing more recently in the Schumer Amendment language. And again, more is to come. So that may be what's going on here, is the sense that the reason why this shift in perspective has been turned into a policy shift is because of the sense that something's coming that would be more disruptive if humankind were not slowly but surely prepped for it. Again, this speaks to some fundamental change in how we see ourselves. That's the sense here. As we consider why now, we should also ask questions about the earlier campaign I mentioned to do with the abduction and hybridization phenomenon. Again, all of this speaks to timing here. So the question is, if indeed what we see in the evidence is that there was an abduction and hybridization campaign that happened for the last few decades of the 20th century, closing around the turn of the millennium, even involving messages from these being two experiencers that the campaign they had been conducting had been successful, that they had managed to hybridize these beings that were part human, part gray alien, or perhaps part future human, again, depending on how you look at it. Because of that, they were done, at least for now. Again, that was at the turn of the millennium. In recent years, some of the telepathic downloads have been increasing again for some of these abductees, suggesting we're about to see another major move in our society, in our civilization. But before we get there, let's think about what would have justified, what would have inspired the abduction and hybridization campaign of the latter 20th century. Well, again, according to messages given to experiencers, there are a few things involved. Number one, there was this sense that because these beings wanted unadulterated human DNA, Homo sapiens sapien DNA, they wanted to do it prior to the historical point where we began to manipulate our DNA. And again, we think here of CRISPR, something that has evolved over the last couple decades. We also think about how Elon Musk has recently used his technology to implant a brain chip for the first time into a human being. Now, again, the messages to experiencers, abductees, even back then, was that they were taking human DNA now because they wanted to do so before we became cyborgs, before we incorporated technology into our very genetic structure. And again, that seems very prescient because sure enough, that's exactly what we are seeing now with the emergence of both CRISPR and then more recently, brain chips being introduced into the neurological processes of humankind. And again, based on how technology tends to roll out, that's probably going to increase and quickly, even perhaps exponentially in our near future. Finally, of course, another reason why they say they took DNA then in the form of sperm and ova as part of this hybridization program is because there was real concern, though not certain knowledge, but real concern that we were going to self-destruct. And furthermore, if you know the lore, you understand that part of what's been suggested by these beings is that many civilizations, when they get to this point where their technology is running amok and greatly outpacing their consciousness growth, that this is the point where many civilizations self-destruct. And again, perhaps because that has been seen so many times, there is this justification around some increasing intervention in our time to try to prevent the worst case scenario. But again, just in case that was going to happen, that's why they chose that particular point in our history to gather human DNA and to engage in this program where they perfected these kind of hybridized beings. A moment ago, I mentioned how experiencers have begun to receive telepathic downloads again, more recently, over the last couple of years. And the sense is that this is tied into what is about to happen in our society, in our civilization, in our world. In fact, that may very well be well underway already. Again, we've spoken to some of these issues. The increased activity of UAP/UFOs happening as experiencers notice a marked uptick in premonitions, all while our civilization shudders under a rising tide of challenges to our very existence as official disclosure approaches. All of these things are co-arising. We've spoken before in this podcast about the co-arising of phenomena to do with general paranormality and the appearance of UFOs. Here we're seeing this incredible nexus that seems to be moving us towards what I'm calling an event horizon around these various elements that are arising, these various dynamics that are interplaying, interacting with each other in the time we find ourselves in right now. As we close here, I want to repeat once again that these challenges can also be seen as opportunities. How we greet these phenomena really will ultimately determine how we look back at them, how we frame them. And so I would encourage each of us to consider, how can we be part of the solution? How can we be part of a movement that does its best to respond to these rising challenges and turn them into, transmute them into opportunities, into transformations to something more unifying, more holistic, more in line with an appropriate understanding of who we actually are, what all of this is, and how we're connected with everything and everyone across this dazzling expanse of a cosmos, which in itself might be one dreamscape amongst many. Finally, as I've been saying both on this podcast and on Liminal Frames of late, disclosure, whatever it ends up entailing, at least in potentia, involves much more than the revelation of aliens and UFOs in our midst. It speaks to the nature of reality itself. And that being the case, regardless of how and when this is disclosed to the public, it is going to be destabilizing. Again, I would suggest it's only because the future coming is even more destabilizing that the powers that be have decided that some sort of prepping of the populace is necessary. And that leads to something I posted on social media recently in terms of how we should respond to this monumental moment. I said, quote, "As the public increasingly realizes the UFO phenomenon is real, some within ufology will want an extended gotcha / told you so moment. We should resist this, because what the world will really need at this juncture is grounded, informed voices to navigate uncharted waters." Unquote. That perspective is precisely what inspires these podcasts that I create, the work that I do with the John Mack Institute, and the courses I teach, including the Expanding Awareness course, which is starting this upcoming Wednesday. Again, if you're interested in that, you can go to essenceofbeing.info to find out more information. Never before has there been a more important time to be energetically aware of all of the elements, all of the dynamics currently arising, co-arising in our reality, involving the astounding complexity that we spoke to today. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.